I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten, and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it.
Is that this is their body responding to betrayal. These systems are in their body. They're wired this way. And this is actually a normal response to the dilemma of having your primary attachment figure betray you and your primary attachment figure become dangerous. This is the normal response, that roller coaster that you're experiencing and the emotional ride that you are on. There's nothing wrong with you. This is just what happens after betrayal.
You're listening to Make Some Noise Podcast, episode number 576 with guest Michelle Mays.
Welcome to Make Some Noise Podcast, your guide for strategies, tools, and insight to empower yourself. I'm your host, Andrea Owen, global speaker, entrepreneur, life coach since 2007, and author of 3 books that have been translated into 18 languages and are available in 22 countries. Each week, I'll bring you a guest or a lesson that will help you maximize unshakable confidence, master resilience, and make some noise in your life. You ready? Let's go.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. Happy New Year, even though we're well into January. I am just so glad that you're here. I'm excited about today's guest. It was a really great conversation, and it was a listener request. Michelle Mays is here talking about betrayal in romantic relationships, and we're going to dive into there in just a second. But I wanted to tell you, I just finished up with another client, and so that means I have another opening for private coaching. So if you think that's for you, head on over to AndreaOwen.com/link, and that's where you'll see which link to click on to check out who my ideal client is, what can we do in coaching, how much does it cost, how long does it take, all of those questions that you might wonder about. And then there's a button on there to fill out an application. That application comes directly to me. No one else sees it except me. So AndreaOwen.com/links. And let me tell you a little bit about today's guest. Michelle Mays is a licensed professional counselor and expert in treating sexual betrayal and trauma. She is the author of the new book, The Betrayal Bind, How to Heal When the Person You Love the Most Has Hurt You the Worst. And she is the founder of the Center for Relational Recovery in Northern Virginia. Michelle is a certified sex addiction therapist and supervisor. She was trained by Pia Melody in the post-induction therapy model for treating developmental trauma and is currently completing her PhD in clinical sexology. So without further ado, here is Michelle, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you. And before we jump in, I did not know, I was reading your bio before you came on. I didn't know that you could get a PhD in clinical sexology.
Yes, you can.
It sounds amazing. But I love that. And I want to, well, first say that this is a listener request. I sent out a survey in the beginning of 2023, and I'm kind of getting through some of the topics that people said they specifically wanted these kind of experts on. And this one was around how to recover from the betrayal of infidelity. And I do want to focus on solution in this podcast. But before we get to that, let's start from the very beginning, because I feel like people have different definitions of cheating. And I also think, like, this is probably a conversation couples should have, like when they decide to be monogamous.
100%. 100%.
Which I have never had. How do you define cheating, and what makes sexual betrayal so devastating and problematic in relationships?
So the way that I define cheating is that it is the breaking of sexual agreements in a relationship. Mm-hmm. So it really doesn't matter if you're in a monogamous relationship, an open relationship, a polyamorous relationship, or some other configuration. Mm-hmm. Whatever relationship you're in, it's the breaking of the sexual agreements within that relationship. And like you said, most people don't make those explicit. Often they don't actually have the conversations about them, and can be surprised when things differ or go south in a way that they didn't expect. So that's the definition. Is that what makes sense for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've seen that question. Like there's a, I saw some like couples card game or something, and it was like just a lot of those like big, deep questions. And that was one of them that I saw. And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, that would definitely be a good conversation to have, because some people wouldn't consider even just flirting in their like social media DMs with someone cheating, and another person might. And I also like that you said that even in, you know, non-traditional open or non-monogamous relationships, there can be cheating, because I think that there's a myth that it's like a free-for-all in the relationship. But the more I look into it, because something I'm interested in when I start dating again, there's agreements that need to be made ahead of time, and those can be broken.
Yeah, and in my experience, folks who are in open or polyamorous relationships, when there is cheating, it's just as devastating for them as for folks who are in monogamous relationships. It really doesn't shift, and you actually have to have a higher level of trust to be in that type of relationship. You have to have a higher level of trust in your partner. A lot of times I also see people think that opening up their relationship is actually an answer to cheating.
Yeah.
And that's never, ever the case. If there's cheating, and you open the relationship, there's just going to be more breaking of those agreements as well.
When someone thinks that that's the solution and they go in that direction, that it wasn't actually the having sex with other people that was the problem. It was the betrayal that was the problem that needs to be addressed.
Yes. And what is the pull to break the sexual agreements for the person who is cheating? Like, what's that really about for them?
Okay.
You know, what's going on for them, and why is that behavior surfacing for them?
Do you find that, and I wanted to ask this question solely from a place of heterosexual monogamous relationships. Do you find that because I have experience with that. My first marriage, my husband had an affair with our neighbor and actually ended up getting her pregnant, which was a whole other level of betrayal, because we were about to start a family ourselves and we'd been together for a long time. And I found, and I remember telling him this, like when it first all came out and we were arguing about it, and I said, I'm less upset that you fucked her, but that you fell in love with her. Because he told me that he felt, he's like, I never meant to fall in love with her. I think he was trying to make me feel better. He was trying to say, I really only went across the street to get laid. And I was like, that doesn't make me feel any better. In fact, it makes me feel worse. So do you find that that's the case in heterosexual relationships, where the woman feels more betrayed about the emotional connection, and a man might feel more betrayed if his wife had sex with someone else? Is that true?
It's definitely true that when there is that emotional piece that comes on board, that the betrayal is deepened. That it feels deeper. So I work with a lot of folks who are dealing with compulsive sexual behavior. So they're dealing with like partners with a 30-year history and a whole like poo-poo platter of behaviors.
Oh.
And it's always interesting to me that you could have somebody who spent, you know, $200,000 on sex workers and has a porn addiction, and sprinkled in the mix of that, there were three affairs. And it's the affairs that bother them. It's the relationship that the person went back to over and over again, or the relationship where there was an emotional connection, that really are sticking point for people.
Yeah.
So that emotional connection is a big, big betrayal for people to get over.
Yeah. And I remember it was for me too. And so you use a term called the betrayal bind. Can you tell us what that is?
So the betrayal bind is a term that I came up with to really capture what happens when we experience betrayal at the hands of our most significant other. So if we just kind of take a detour for a minute and talk about attachment, and attachment theory. So us, for adults, we still have all the same attachment needs that we had as children. We don't outgrow those. And in our adult lives, that person, our primary person in the world, our primary bond and place of security is to our partner. Mm-hmm. So that's our primary attachment. And when there's betrayal in your romantic relationship, what happens is that the person who you actually depend on to help you manage life's difficulties and stressors becomes the difficulty and the stressor. Mm-hmm. So they become the problem. And that means that you don't have a good solution because you don't have a good way to go to them for comfort and help and support when they're the one that have actually cheated on you and created all the emotional distress that you've had. So it puts you in a massive bind. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about that more if you want to in terms of just what happens in our threat response system and our attachment system and how it impacts our behavior. But for most betrayed partners, they find themselves in this dilemma of you're still my person in the world. And now you're also my the source of danger and the problem here in this relationship.
So yeah, I would love to hear a little bit further into that because I know that the people listening are interested in attachment styles. Mm-hmm. And so yes, please say more.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so typically in life, in normal life, our attachment system and our threat response system sync up really, really well. And so usually what our attachment system does inside of us is it prompts us to reach for relational connection when we feel stress.
Which is a good, healthy thing, right? Like I'm always telling people, like, reach out for help from the people you trust.
This is not codependent. Yes. This is not codependent, okay. Right?
I just want to clarify.
This is how we're wired. Mm-hmm. This is hardwiring, which is the best thing that helps us calm our system down is connection with another human who also has a good, calm nervous system. Mm-hmm. So it's our best tool for helping ourselves manage stress. So that's what our attachment system does. And people don't always realize that that's its purpose is to help us reach for connection when we're experiencing stress. So usually when our threat response system fires off and says, hey, this is hard, challenging, dangerous, our attachment system says, yeah, it is. Call your partner, text your partner, reach for a connection because that's how you're going to get through this moment. And so usually those systems sync up really, really well for us. In betrayal, what happens is now your partner has cheated on you, lied to you, whole host of things that you're in the middle of discovering. And your threat response system says, they are dangerous. Get the heck away from them. Fight, flee. In some way, you got to manage that danger. Mm-hmm. But your attachment system is still saying, hey, they're your person. Go toward them. Mm-hmm. Go tell them how upset you are. Go tell them how much distress you're in. And so both systems fire, and these are instinctual systems inside of us. They're not like things we think about. So they're instinctual and they both fire. And then what happens for betrayed partners is they feel like they're going nuts.
Yeah.
Because they feel like, oh my gosh, you're the person that betrayed me, but I still want to like get in bed and have you hold me while I cry. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning, I'm going to get up and I'm going to call the divorce lawyer because I never want to see your ass again. Mm-hmm. And then that afternoon, they're like, I think we should do couples counseling.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster.
So they're all over the place with trying to manage what's happening. And what I think is so helpful for people to understand is that this is their body responding to betrayal. These systems are in their body. They're wired this way. And this is actually a normal response to the dilemma of having your primary attachment figure betray you, mm-hmm. and your primary attachment figure become dangerous. This is the normal response, that roller coaster that you're experiencing and the emotional ride that you are on. There's nothing wrong with you. This is just what happens after betrayal.
Thank you for laying that out and normalizing it because, you know, I'm thinking back to my own experience and I'm thinking about the listeners. What happened to me was I was also inundated with my friends, mostly my friends, and well-meaning, like, fuck that guy. How could he do that? You're so much better mm-hmm. off. You know, and a lot of at least, you know, at least you didn't have kids with him. At least you're still young enough where you can move on and still find someone else and have kids. And
So I would, you know, as I nodded my head to all of that, like, yeah, they're right. They're right. But why do I still want to stay married to him given the circumstances? Why would I? And I knew, and I was so, I would never have admitted it at the time, but if he had come back, in my case, he, you know, he wanted to leave, like he was leaving me for her. And I, you know, the choice had been made for me, but if he would have come crawling back, which he eventually did a long time afterwards, but when it didn't work out with her, but at the time, like if he would have come back and said, I'm so sorry, you know, can we raise this kid together? Can you be the stepmother to this child, this other child? I would have said yes. Ooh,
big ask, right?
I would have said yes.
That would be a big ask. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you're not unusual in that. I mean, I think you've got two things going on in what you said. One, everybody has an opinion.
Yeah.
And it's super hard as a betrayed partner to manage everybody else's opinions. Because I always ask this question in our coaching program, like before you experienced betrayal, what was your thought about it? And everybody says you leave them.
Yeah.
And then after you experienced betrayal, what actually happened? You tried to save the relationship.
Yeah. Or at best, you're confused about what to do.
At best, you're confused. But honestly, most people, if there's any way to make an attempt at saving the relationship. And that doesn't always pan out, obviously. And that looks like lots of different journeys for lots of different people on that. Mm-hmm. But I think that in our culture, we don't have good language. We don't know how to hold space for people to figure this out and have their own process of figuring out even how to leave or if they should leave or if they should stay. And that takes a lot of time to sort through because of what's happening in our bodies and because we are attached to this person. Like, we don't break our attachments lightly. These are big, huge parts of our lives. So I think that trying to manage all the input from the outside is really challenging for people. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it was challenging for you in the middle of that.
Confusing, for sure. It was a lot of different layers looking back. And at the time, it just was all a big jumbled mess. So we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to ask you more about this. And because you have something really interesting called the three injuries. So we'll be right back. There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again. And I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed? Finding a unique gift that they'll love, that's personal and that they won't already have, can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then a Songfinch musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect.
Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise. You talk about something called the three injuries that individuals going through betrayal experience. So can you tell us about those?
Every betrayed partner goes through these three different injuries. And the first one is the attachment injury. And we've touched on that a little bit, talking about this betrayal bind that people end up in. I mean, the attachment injury is really the damage to your sense of safe connection to your partner. And what we don't understand about that often is that our sense of safe connection to our partner is also what makes us feel safe in the world. It's what lets us go out into the world and take risks and go be who we are in our careers and our hobbies and our passions. And we have a safe base to come back to. So the attachment injury that everybody experiences, it really rocks their whole world and their whole sense of self when they lose that safe bond. So that's the first injury. The second injury is the emotional and psychological injury. And this has to do with the fact that cheating always comes with lying. Mm-hmm. So whenever you are dealing with somebody who is cheating, it's in secret. Yeah. You know, they are hiding it. It's a whole big secret. And often they're definitely lying about it. But there's also usually an additional layer of gaslighting that comes on with that, where they are really manipulating your reality and interfering with your ability to perceive reality accurately. And that creates, of course, huge trust issues with the partner. But it also affects your trust in yourself and in other people. Like, it kind of starts to feel like, okay, I didn't know this about them and they've been lying to me. So who else is lying to me? Mm-hmm. Is everybody like this in the world? You know, so it really undermines your sense of safety and trust in a really larger way than just the relationship. And then the third injury is the sexual injury. And the sexual injury has to do with the fact that sexual betrayal is sexual in nature. It impacts, for betrayed partners, it impacts their sense of their own sexuality really significantly. Often, the betrayal immediately makes them question their own desirability. Mm-hmm. It affects body image tremendously. It affects their sense of who they are sexually. And is that okay? Is that, you know, what's going on there? So they end up having a lot of questions and sexual insecurity come on board for them, not to mention then having to deal with, if you are trying to heal your relationship and you are trying to re-engage sexually with the cheating partner, dealing with the images that are flashing in, you know, all this intrusive flashbacky stuff to the cheating partner with the other person. So there's an enormous amount of stuff that goes on in the sexual injury. So every betrayed partner is dealing with all three of those injuries, and they overlap. They're not discrete and impact one another and exacerbate one another.
Now that you're breaking all of this down, I've experienced all three of those, especially that last one. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that it's gender specific. You know, men who have felt, who've been betrayed by their partners, face one set of kind of specific injuries, as you call them. And you know, for women, in my experience, I felt all of that. And definitely, I think because as women, we're socially conditioned to understand that a lot of our value is wrapped up in our appearance and our body and our sexual desirability. Mm-hmm. That just will haunt you, you know, like comparing yourself
it's a good
to the
word.
Other person.
It's a good word, haunt. Yeah.
It just can really stick around. And so can you go more specifically into the gaslighting? Why do individuals who are cheating, what in your professional opinion, why do they gaslight their partners?
So I think there's a couple of things happening. I think when people are cheating, they're often operating outside their own value system. Mm-hmm. So the research shows that most people who are cheating believe cheating is wrong. Mm-hmm. So they're operating outside of their value system. And in order to go outside their value system, they have to tell themselves a whole story about why it's okay for them to do that.
Yeah.
And often that story involves making the person they're betraying wrong.
Or sometimes even their fault.
Yes, exactly. So in order to hurt this person, I have to make it their fault that I am doing this. Mm-hmm. I have to think about all the things that bug me about them. And here's the thing, we're all imperfect people. So there's plenty to find in any relationship. There's plenty to find that you don't like about your partner. You know, everybody's dealing with imperfect people. So I'm going to take all of that and I'm going to make it bigger. I'm going to blow it up and exacerbate it. I'm going to pick fights with my partner. I'm going to manufacture conflict, all so that I can then, in my own mind, blame them for what I'm doing and justify that it's okay. What I'm doing is okay. And so once you've got that kind of, I call that kind of like a mental scaffolding that the cheater builds. Mm-hmm. Once you've got that in place, then it's very easy to turn that on the betrayed partner. And especially if the betrayed partner starts to get wind of what's happening, they start to feel like something is wrong in the relationship. Mm-hmm. They start to feel like something's not right here. Now I'm asking questions. Now I'm probing. Now I'm looking at things. So now the cheating partner feels like, I've got to protect my secret. I've got this double life going on over here. I've got this secret life going on. I need to protect it. And the way that I'm going to protect that is I am going to tell my betrayed partner that they are crazy, that they have issues, that no, they didn't see that. No, that text doesn't mean that. They're just super sensitive about what they just saw. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to delete the text and say, it was not ever even there. Mm-hmm. You never saw it. Why are you making that up? So the gaslighting goes beyond just lying. You know, lying is, I was with the affair partner when I was at work. Gaslighting is, I deleted that text and then I told you that you never saw it. Mm-hmm. Gaslighting is when we make somebody feel like they can't trust their five senses and they can't trust their own perception of reality. And the cheating partner is actively trying to undermine that so that they hide their behavior, so that they keep their behavior hidden, and so that they don't have to feel their own guilt, shame, or remorse about mm-hmm. their behavior.
When I had my experience, it was 2006. So this was before the term gaslighting was, you know, part of our sort of vernacular. And so I just looked at it as, you know, he was lying, but also I very much knew that the way I describe it is like, he made me feel like I was going nuts. And there was one point where we were fighting about it and I was accusing him of having an affair and he, you know, was denying it vehemently and the gaslighting. And I paused and I remember saying, it's either happening or you are the unluckiest man in the world because it sure as shit looks like you are. And years later, when I heard the term and was like, oh, I, you know, there's a term for it. And I wasn't going mm-hmm. crazy and I was actually right the whole time. First of all, that validation is such a mixed bag of emotions because it's like the immense relief that you feel of like, oh, I was right the whole time and just the vindication of it, but also the reality of like, oh, I was right the whole time. It actually was happening behind my back. And in my case, it was for 7 months. I think too, and correct me if I'm wrong, as the person who's being betrayed, the focus gets to be pulled off of the other person who's doing the cheating and onto the person who's questioning their own reality. And the focus became on me and my mental health and my mental issues. And then I started to believe him and think, maybe I am going crazy. Maybe I am making all of this up. Like, maybe he's right when he says, like, how could you ever think I would do this to you? That was the one.
Right. You have trust issues because of your family of origin.
Right.
And, you know, your dad cheated on your mom. And so now this is just your trust issues about that. So yes, you're describing it perfectly because it is this like attacking, turning it on you and attacking you and your mental health, your perception of reality. I wish that I'd only heard the story once, but I've heard the story multiple times, which is that the person who's having the affair or cheating accuses the other person of having the affair.
I was wondering if that's where it was going because that happened to me too.
And that has happened to the point where I have had clients tell me they thought that they maybe had mm-hmm. like dissociative identity disorder and multiple person and like another personality that was having an affair. I mean, they got
sleepwalking or something.
Around.
Yeah. Yeah.
So turned around in their own reality because the cheating partner was so adamant and vehement and crying tears about the way they had been betrayed that it undermined the other person's reality that severely.
Because you want to believe that other person. Because like you're saying, like it's your primary relationship. This is your person.
It is your primary relationship. And I think that double-edged sword you were talking about earlier about feels vindicated when you find out, okay, I was right about this. I'm not going nuts. I'm not crazy. But it's also this horrid, horrid experience of, oh my word, like this person did that to me. They didn't just lie to me. They have like actively tried to make me feel like I am crazy and I am not in touch with reality. And they have accused me of horrible things. That is such a hard realization to come into that your partner could do that to you. And often that piece is even harder than the cheating for a lot of betrayed partners too. It's more painful in some ways because it's just so shocking that someone that you love and has said they love you and have your back could do that to you.
Yeah. In my experience, it was, I think it was equally as painful. And just, I remember that feeling of racking my brain thinking, because I'm also like just naturally a flirtatious person. So that got thrown in my face, you know, and like, oh, it's actually you. You're the one. And it just was, it was such a mind bending. It was like the Matrix meets, you know, like what is this reality that I'm in? And like the final, and I remember the day that I found out. In my case, I had called his cell phone because we were going to have dinner the next day for Valentine's Day. And I called his cell phone to make plans, just logistics. And she answered because he was in the shower. And he had also been lying to her too. So he'd been legitimately living a double life and lying to her about that we were getting divorced. And I just wasn't handling it very well. That's why we were still living together. The moment I found out, I had a dissociative moment. Because I was standing in a Barnes & Noble when I made the phone call. I walked out into the parking lot. And I remember having those thoughts of, you know, for people listening, like, have you ever had that moment where kind of time slows down and you're almost like watching it from the outside, like a movie? And I remember thinking to myself, shouldn't I be crying right now? Almost like the script said, you know, like woman bursts into tears. And I just started laughing hysterically, like threw my head back, almost maniacal. Like people watching were probably like, this woman is losing her mind. And I felt like I was. And part of why I was laughing was because I was like, oh my God, I was fucking right. I was right. And just didn't know. And then after that, it just kind of all hell broke loose and drama happened, which I won't get into, but before we take a break, I want to go into solution. And can you talk to us about what, I mean, gosh, where do we even start? Like, can you first, like, is there a glimmer of hope? Do people come back from this? That's what the listeners want to know.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So, and I always say this, there's hope for relationships. You can heal things that you would be shocked at. I literally have just come off our retreat with our couples mastermind that we have. We did 4 days out on a horse farm and did therapy work. And these couples are dealing with 30 and 40 year histories of massive amounts of acting out. And they are all in it together and working on the relationship. And they're all, of course, in different stages with that. But as we were wrapping up, one of the women said, as we were kind of going around the circle and talking about the weekend, one of the women said, if you told me that I could be here after I discovered betrayal and we were in the early, I would never believe that this was possible. So I just want to offer that to those who are trying to heal your relationship, that is absolutely possible. The deciding factor is, are you both in it 100%? Because you do have to be both 100% in it, committed to it, putting your energy into it. If one person is dragging the other one, it doesn't work. However, not everybody's partner is in it with them. What I want to say is, so sometimes there's enormous healing and hope for couples, but there's always, always healing available for you as the betrayed partner. Your relationship may not be salvageable, but you can absolutely heal from betrayal and move into the rest of your life and thrive and flourish afterward. This is not something that you need to think this is going to mark me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That is not something that has to be that way. You can heal from that.
I want to circle back and ask you about that in a minute, but I'm curious because, you know, the term narcissist gets thrown around a lot. And, you know, I've mm-hmm. come to find out like, well, not everyone, sometimes they're just like entitled assholes, you know, like that were raised in a culture, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't mean to stereotype, but I think a lot of, mm-hmm. And I know a lot of women cheat too, but in terms of, you know, my listeners, they're mostly women. And if they have experienced it, it's usually at the hands of a male partner. How do you, I mean, I don't know if there's some kind of like textbook checklist that you have, but like, how does someone know if their partner is truly in it? Or how do you as an expert know? Or if they're just kind of like checking the boxes to be able to stay in a convenient relationship? Like, do we ever know? Mm-hmm. Or are there some telltale signs that you look for?
No, you can, you do know. And here's how you know. We actually just had a big conversation about this in the coaching program. So you know, because you are not the energy behind your partner's work. So as long as you, as a betrayed partner, feel like I have to be like, hey, I really need you to be in therapy. Why aren't you going to your therapy appointment? Hey, we need to make a couple therapy appointment. Hey, why aren't you doing your homework? Why aren't you doing your 12-step stuff? Hey, why aren't you like, hey, I need to have transparency on the phone. Hey, why'd you change your password and not tell me? You know, as long as you are in that role where it is your energy driving everything forward,
managing the therapy,
then your partner is not fully committed. Now, yeah. I want to just give one caveat to that. At the beginning of things, often you do have to be the energy. Because at the very beginning, you have to basically say, this is what I expect and this is what I will not tolerate. Because cheating partner, I often say this, the cheating partner will put you through whatever you will tolerate. So you do at the beginning have to use your energy to drive both of you into healing and recovery and say, this is what I'm willing to do and this is what I will not tolerate. And if you want any chance of me staying in this relationship to do repair with you, this is what needs to happen. So you do have to do that at the beginning.
Not only are you setting boundaries in terms of the relationship, like here's what I will and will, you know, just in case we never talked about it ahead of time, here's what I will and will not tolerate in our relationship. And also here's what I expect of you in terms of our therapy in order.
In terms of our therapy, our healing, our repair, like we have to repair this.
Yeah.
Repairing betrayal is a whole big bunch of work. And so both people have to be really invested in that. So you might, as a betrayed partner, have to use a lot of your energy at the beginning to say, here's what I expect. And I'm holding the line on that. I'm not lowering my expectations because you're telling me I don't need that. I'm sorry. And so I'm never going to do it again. Well, don't believe that, you know, because treatment is needed.
Yeah.
So you do have to use your energy to hold the line. But once you're in treatment together, once you're doing the things, your partner has to take over and he has to be his own, he or she has to be their own motivating. It has to come out of their own commitment to the relationship and to repairing the damage they have caused. And it can't come from you constantly going behind them and kicking their butt and moving them along. So that is one of the ways you tell if your partner is really in it with you and not just checking the box, is you can see it. You can see their commitment. You can see their willingness. You can see them in their behavior, making the changes that you need to see. And it's, you're looking for consistency over time.
Consistency over time. Okay. All right. We're going to take one more break. When we get back, I want to dive a little bit more into the recovery piece. Be right back.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Okay, we were talking before the break about the recovery, and can you tell us, like, what are some typical sort of exercises or topic conversations that happen, especially in the beginning?
So in the beginning of treatment, in the beginning of recovery from,
like when someone comes to you and they've had this experience, whether it was like an affair or, like you were saying, like, and I guess maybe the question is, like, is it different if you're talking about a couple who, if it's like a chronic?
Yeah. So I would say the very first thing you have to do is you have to figure out, is this an affair? Is this a couple affairs? Is this, you know, something that it would be considered traditional infidelity? Or is this a pattern of compulsive sexual behavior, sexual addiction, problematic? It has many names out there in the world, but is this something compulsive, basically? Is this a pattern of compulsive addictive behavior? Treatment for those two things is completely different. So you have to figure that out at the beginning. And that can be challenging because sometimes your partner is, the cheating partner is just dripping out a little bit.
Yeah, they're not being completely truthful.
And it takes a while for the whole big story to come out and you to start to realize, oh, there's more going on here. Mm-hmm. Anytime you start to see combos of behavior, like there's an affair with porn use, with massage parlors, or there's actually been three affairs, or there's actually been, anytime you start to see that, I think you want to ask your partner to be evaluated to make sure there isn't an addictive component. Because the fact that there's more than kind of an isolated incident can signal a bigger issue, and sometimes not. So it's no guarantee, but it's good to get them evaluated.
Okay.
For that.
Can we touch on that for a little bit? You know, the compulsive behaviors, like, where is the line drawn? And I've heard kind of a mixed bag with opinions in terms of experts of, you know, does quote unquote sexual addiction even exist? Like, especially with the prevalence and just how mainstream pornography has become. Like, what is your, can you give us your hot take on that?
You know, my hot take on it is that it doesn't have anything to do with your behaviors. So I think that people get confused because they think, oh, maybe this behavior is an indicator of addiction. Mm-hmm. But that's not true. So it's not that you're watching pornography makes you an addict or that you're doing this behavior. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with, does this behavior cause negative consequences in my life? And even though it causes negative consequences, I keep doing it anyway. Do I see that this behavior is something that I don't want to be doing? It's violating my value system in some way. It's hurting somebody I love. And I keep doing it anyway. Is this behavior escalating over time? Am I seeing kind of started here and now I'm here and I'm here and I'm here and I'm here and I didn't really want to end up here?
Yeah.
And that means, okay, that might be something that's going on there. So what we're really looking for is a place where the behavior is sort of driving you rather than you driving it and making choices. And it's really kind of pushing you into things that you didn't want or causing negative consequences for you and people you love. And yet you still keep going back to it and keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's really not about your sexual behavior. It's about the way, I always say, you know, sex is like alcohol, sex is like food, sex is like money. You can use all of those things in great ways for like nourishment and play and fun. And you can become an alcoholic, a gambling addict, a food addict, you know, you can use them to medicate your life, to numb out, to deal with your emotions. emotions, all those things.
Yeah.
So sex is no different. It can be used in both ways.
Okay. Thank you for that. And do you feel like couples tend to, just generally speaking, throw in the towel a little bit too early? I think I saw like a clip or something of Esther Perel talking about how, in her opinion, that people throw away, you know, like a 30-year marriage based on this one behavior or, you know, like an affair when they really could have salvaged the relationship. And, you know, she was like saying, it's like, just, it's sad. It's a travesty. So what is your opinion on that? Do you think that happens too much?
I do think so. I think that some of that is our cultural story that we're all living in, which is you leave the person that cheats on you.
Yeah.
And I sometimes think people don't know they have another option. Mm-hmm. They don't know that there's actually a way to repair this. There's actually a way to, and I think also some people think, oh, but am I going to repair it? But it's still going to be like I'm like in a half life in this relationship. Like I never really feel good again. And they don't realize that, no, actually you can feel really good again. I think Esther Perel talks about this in terms of first marriage, second marriage to the same person, you know, that you're really developing a brand new relationship with them. And so that is really possible. And I think we need to have better conversations and modeling and visions of that, because I don't think people realize it's possible. And a lot of marriages, I think, do end that could be saved if people had a different vision in front of them for what's possible.
Yeah. And I think you kind of nailed it in the beginning when you said this is our cultural perception of cheating and infidelity in a relationship. And it's interesting. I told a little bit of my story in a TikTok a couple years ago and it went viral. It had 6.6 million views. Some women, but the vast majority of men who commented and put the onus on me, you know, like, what were you doing wrong in the relationship to have made your husband cheat on you? And, you know, whatever, those don't bother me as much anymore as they used to, but it points to the shame that people feel, I think, regardless of gender, who got cheated on. That shame, I think, is, in my experience, a lot of the driving factor to walk away from the relationship, because you're trying to salvage any kind of dignity that you have to walk away and be like, I'm the brave one. I'm the one that has the power because I left you for betraying me. Because if you stay, you know, I think we often look down on people who stay as weak and a doormat. And I wish that that wasn't the case.
Yeah, we need a massive cultural shift on this. Mm-hmm. We need a massive cultural shift. So going back to just all these comments that were made to you, I do think that this is different for there's a gender divide on this. Mm-hmm. I do think that in our culture, if your male spouse cheats on you and you're female, then the culture looks at you and says, what'd you do? What'd you do wrong? And if you're a female and you cheat on a male, the culture looks at you and says, what's wrong with you?
Right. Do that to a good man.
We get to be shamed in either direction.
Right.
We get to bear the shame for cheating. And that has got to shift. We have got to have a cultural shift on that. And then I think you're right. We also have to have a cultural shift around this idea that because you've been cheated on and you're female, therefore something is wrong with you. Mm-hmm. And now you carry the shame. I call this carried shame, right? This is carrying the shame of the cheating for the cheating partner. The betrayed partner often carries that shame. And there is a sense of leaving is the only way I can figure out how to reclaim my dignity and my self-respect.
Yeah.
And that is not true, but that falsehood can again feel like I don't see another option.
Right.
So one of the things that I work a lot with my clients on is, what is the story you're telling yourself about your choice to stay? Because sometimes they are choosing to stay, but then they go into this story about I have no self-respect and I have no dignity and I'm so weak. I let him do this to me. And I'm like, in what world did you let him do this to you?
Right.
So let's just look at this belief structure and let's dismantle this belief structure because this is a toxic belief structure for everybody involved. And so there's a lot of work on that to help people shift and know actually staying for me is a choice made from my dignity and from my self-respect. And I'm expecting things in my relationship and from my partner as we rebuild and re-repair.
That is some next level inner work right there. I commend anyone who not just stays, but just does the work in order to stand in that place of your own power and your decision.
Yes, yes. And here's the thing. That is the healing work.
Mm-hmm.
That is the healing work for betrayed partners, because betrayal is such an experience of profound powerlessness. Mm-hmm. I mean, you didn't choose for this to happen to you. Like, this person literally took your power away. Yeah. In the relationship, and took your choice away in the relationship by changing the sexual agreements without your consent.
Right.
So it's a powerful experience of powerlessness. And for healing, for betrayed partners, so much of the healing is about learning how to come out of that powerlessness and really step into your empowered self. I call it operating from your personal power center. Mm-hmm. And learning how to do that in the relationship, where you are asking for what you need and you're using your voice effectively and powerfully in the relationship, and you're setting boundaries and you're clear on your vision and you're clear on your own dignity. Yeah. And you're building a relationship of trust with yourself while you do that. So that is the name of the healing game right there.
The name of the healing game. And all of those things that you just ticked off are not easy. I'm like, oh,
they're not easy. They're not easy. They're not for the faint of heart. I often say that we should call our coaching program for betrayed partners, and it's called Braving Hope. But I always say we should really call it Betrayal Trauma Boot Camp.
Yeah.
Because it is really,
or at least
such deep hard work.
Yeah.
It's such deep hard work. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I have one more question. I'm just curious about your professional opinion on this, because my big fat opinion is that human beings were not meant to be monogamous. Like, I just feel like, okay, if we were, then there would be some switch that gets shut off when we decide to commit to someone, to where we're not attracted to other people, like where we stop like feeling like we want to flirt with someone. So I've always said, I do feel like we're not meant to be monogamous. And in order to do that is such a gift to your partner, and it shouldn't be taken lightly. So what is your opinion on that? I mean, just like from a biological standpoint, can you start there?
I don't have like a black and white view of that.
Yeah.
I don't have like a we are meant to or we are not meant to, because I really see both pieces of it. I see how incredibly challenging it is when we are not monogamous for our attachment systems to ever feel safe and to ever find safety. So there's like a downside to that. But then there's also the issue of attraction to other partners and challenge of being in a very long-term relationship with someone. So I don't see it as a black and white thing, and I don't see it as a this is the truth and this is the truth. What I do think is that you have to be really aware of who you are and what is going to be best for you, right? There are people who their attachment systems could never tolerate non-monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
It would literally be a recipe for a massive anxiety disorder.
And those are usually are you saying the anxious attachment style or disorganized maybe?
It can be any attachment style.
Oh, okay.
That can kind of look at themselves and know who they are and know this would not work well for me. And then there are going to be other people who can look at that and say, actually, I think that would work well for me. And I think I could deal with that. And actually the pluses would be bigger than the minuses for me. And for other people, the minuses are going to be bigger than the pluses. I think this is really, really about knowing yourself. Really honest conversations about what is good for you and not good for you. And I just don't have a, this is true for everybody mm-hmm. view of it.
That's fair.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
What I have come to realize now that I've been calling myself a multiple award-winning divorcee. I'm going through my second, is that I need a lot of reassurance
mm-hmm.
as an anxious attachment style
who yes.
seems to be yes. very attracted to avoidance.
There you go. Yeah.
Surprise. Yep. Yeah. I need a lot of reassurance in terms of affection and words and mm-hmm. all of the love languages. It's been an interesting journey in these two marriages, and now looking, you know, retrospectively at both of them really, but just my patterns and you know mm-hmm. I'm 48 and these paths are deep. These are some deep ruts in this brain. I'll tell you what, Michelle.
Those, you know what, those, your attachment style is not a small thing. It is not a small thing. It's so deep because it goes all the way back to when we're so young. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really fantastic that you're in awareness about that.
Yeah.
You know that about yourself. You know that you need that level of reassurance. You know all the things that are happening for you in your body when you're dealing with what's happening in your relationship. And so many people are unconscious about that mm-hmm. and don't know. They don't know why they are operating the way they're operating, and they confound themselves, you know, and confuse themselves. So I think that awareness is the first big step on the road with it.
Yeah, it's the awareness thing is, I call it the point of no return. And I always acknowledge for my listeners that it can be a tricky place to be because you can't unsee. And sometimes it feels mm-hmm. almost a little bit easier to like go through life, like making not great decisions and like wondering why. But when you know it and you can see it both retrospectively and prospectively, you're like, oh my God, here it is. And one of the things, I'll just say this one last thing because it might be helpful for the listeners and then we can close up, is what I have realized, you know, I mentioned, you know, I like when people tell me like, no, I love you, I'm not going anywhere, I'm going to stay here. But I think the biggest reassurance for me that has been the hardest to achieve in any kind of committed relationship is when I am vulnerable with someone, when I start to show them my whole self, like I'm not just one dimensional, like I'm three dimensional. I have complicated and messy parts of me, and I'm going to show you a little bit of it. What do you think? When they, you know, in John Gottman's work, he calls it, you know, turning towards or turning away. Mm-hmm. And we have these bids for connection. When my partner turns away, when, you know, when they don't show up and, you know, when I'm vulnerable and, you know, mm-hmm. just kind of like bear witness and quote unquote hold space, that for me is the minute I'm like, oh, here I am again. You're leaving me. This is, and it feels like a little betrayal, like a, you just left yes. me. And yes. I say that because it's not a small thing. Like I'm realizing now it's like, ooh, that's a big wound.
Yeah. And usually that sense of, so I call that like you're experiencing relational disconnection in that moment.
And it's an old wound for me.
You made a reach. You made a reach. Yeah. Your partner in some way didn't reach back or moved away even. Mm-hmm. There's a miss there. That's going to scare you.
Oh yeah.
It's red in your body is scary. Mm-hmm. And if it goes back to the childhood wound, it can actually spark abandonment terror. It can spark really deep fear. Like if you had a lot of abandonment in your childhood, then I often talk to my clients about abandonment terror. And for some clients, if that abandonment was really, really young and they had trauma really, really, it's like almost an annihilation terror.
Oh,
like I'm going to cease to exist here in this moment of disconnection. And these are like often small moments in our relationship that are big moments.
Right.
Because they make us feel like, oh, I can't really count on you. You're not going to really be there. And sometimes the other partner doesn't even know they're doing that. Mm-hmm. And then when it scares us, we get scary.
Right.
And then we scare them back and then they get mm-hmm. scarier. And now we're just in this awful cycle.
Now you're
cycle.
Just in a haunted house.
Now we're just in an awful cycle together where we're both just freaked out about the fact that we don't think the other person can be there for us.
Right.
And yeah, and lots of people go, I mean, I think every relationship has these moments and these patterns in them. And growth is figuring out how to work through that together.
And talk about it and admit it. And yeah.
Talk about it, admit it, and change it. Mm-hmm. You know, start to figure out how do we work with these places where we miss each other and turn them around. Like we talk with our couples a lot about do-overs.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. asking for a do-over with your partner, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We need to close up and I could talk to you about this forever, but I think Abandonment Terror, a memoir, is going to be my next book. So anyway, that term, I was like, oh, that hit me in the face. So tell people yeah. where they can go to learn more about you and your betrayal boot camp and all of those things.
All right. So you can go to michellemaze.com and on there you'll find all the things, but you'll find information about my book that's out, The Betrayal Bind, How to Heal When the Person You Love the Most Has Hurt You the Worst, and about our coaching program for betrayed partners called Braving Hope.
Yes. And you come so highly recommended by my dear friend and colleague, Kate Anthony. So we have stamp of approval there. And of course, all those links will be in the show notes. We didn't even get to your book. I'm going to have you on again. Thank you, listeners, for being here. I'm so grateful for your time. I know that you have many choices when it comes to podcasts, and I appreciate that you come and spend your time with me and my guests. And remember, it's our life's journey to make ourselves better humans and our life's responsibility to make the world a better place. Bye for now. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. I would be so incredibly grateful if you haven't done so already, if you could leave a review of this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Super easy if you already listen to your shows over there. But if you don't, or maybe you have the app on your phone, but you listen to the show on a different app, if you could leave a review for this show, it matters so much. I wish I could express how much it matters. I also wish that it didn't matter so much, but alas, it does. So if you haven't already, please go review and rate the show. It would mean so much to me. And thank you so much. I hope you have an amazing day.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.